ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Continuing on the introduction. Maline mochanam bhumsam jalasnanam dine dine sakrit sakrit gitamritam snanam samsara malanashanam. One may cleanse himself daily by taking a bath in water, but if one takes a bath even once in the sacred Ganges water of Bhagavad Gita, for him the dirt of material life is altogether vanquished. Gita Mahatmya 3. By taking bath in the Ganga, then one is purified. But this is a slow process, because it is happening because we are going there, body is being purified, subtle body is being purified, but the main purification would be coming from our understanding, from our knowledge. This is more important. That's the main purification. That if we purify ourselves in this other way, it is good. It is slow, though. But if we purify ourselves by our understanding, that's better. Because then, one, something is being taken away without our knowledge. So we're becoming purified. That's good. That's nice. But if we actually have the determination that something will go, that's better. That's quicker. Because we're doing something unconsciously, we don't get the same benefit as if we're doing something consciously. This is the important aspect. So, by taking bath, even though the bath itself is conscious, but how the sins are going away is not conscious. We just know the Ganga is pure. By bathing in the Ganga, we will be purified. But with knowledge, then you know what is going, what is there and how it's going. So that's more important. One needs to know this. Because at some point, then this must be recognized. It means we have so many desires are there, and these desires are there because we wanted them to be there. Whatever is in the heart, it's we want it to be there. Like that. Means we don't necessarily remember how we wanted it to be there. Like, if you know, we don't necessarily understand that. But that's how it happened. Nothing happened to us that we didn't want, right? In some way or another. And so therefore, the desires that are there in the heart, the impurities that are there in the heart, we must have knowledge and want them to go away. Because otherwise, in sin, you have four levels. You have the seed itself, then that fructifies into a tree, and then that gives the fruit. Then there's also what causes or the future desires. Future desires. You do a sinful activity or you do a pious activity, you want to do it again. Right? Something's nice, you want to do it again. So you've done some activity, then that will create a reaction. That's bad. Because no one likes the bad reaction. But worse than that is the desire to do it again. That is worse. So only devotional service can get rid of that. Only devotional service can get rid of that. It means these other pious activities may get rid of, they'll definitely get rid of the reaction. Right? You are supposed to get some reaction, I'm going to get rid of that. If it's more constant, it'll get rid of things that are about to happen, because they will also turn into something. Right? The tree is sprouted. Some trees are going to give reaction now or are giving reaction. So that will go. That's the first thing to go. The second thing, if it's more constant, it may get rid of things that are just about to happen, because if you give them time, they will happen. So it's getting rid of things that are happening. So it's a matter of get rid of what's happening today. You keep taking bath, it'll get rid of things that will happen tomorrow, because tomorrow you also take bath. So those will go. But what doesn't go is the seed. Right? And these desires to do these things. That doesn't go away. So this is the problem. So that's why the knowledge of the Gita, bathing in that, then gets rid of more than bathing in the Ganga. Because then with knowledge you see what is there and you want it to go. Right? The prarabdha karma and the what's called phulan mukhi, that what is just about to give fruit, that you may know what's there, may not know what's there. Why it's there, why it's not there, we don't know. But by studying Gita, then we can observe the desires in the heart. Because that's where it starts anyway. You get rid of those desires, you get rid of the rest of it. The desire then sprouts the seed, then grows the plant and gives the fruit. So if you get rid of the desire, you get rid of the whole process. Therefore, the knowledge is more important. Right? The activities are good, like this, bathing in the Ganga, and these different things, but the knowledge, that is actually better. Because then you can see, here is material desire, here is spiritual activity, and you can tell the difference between them. Otherwise, if one can't tell that difference, then sometimes one will think material activity is spiritual. Like making politics over getting some position in devotional service, we may think this is devotional service. But it's not. It's just our desire for name and fame, position, control, these things. We're trying to dovetail it in Krishna's service, but it itself is not spiritual. Right? Doing management for Krishna, then that is engaged, that's okay. But the politics to get into that position, that's not spiritual. And very difficult to engage also. Right? Very difficult to engage. So therefore, it's a weed. Desire for name, fame, position, facility, right? Control. But we think this is devotional service. Right? Or we, you know, it is maybe we're, you know, how do you say, we've been around, you know, longer than others, or we've done something, we have experience in something that someone else may not. So we see them doing the activity and we feel they're not doing it properly. So then we may come in very strongly, tell them you can't do this, it's nonsense, this, that, so many things. So then we may miss. In here, then two things are happening. One is that we're trying to benefit another person who in some way or another we feel is junior or in some way either in experience or position or something. So that's not bad. But our method to do it may not be good. We may be harsh and feel it's our right to be harsh when it's not. Especially if the person is not a dependent. You know, just, they're there and then we just feel, yes, we should say. But that's okay, as long as that's the mood. When that mood is there, then that's there. If the person is surrendered, okay. But if they're not, then what's our position? So then it's a weed. Though the endeavor, it looks very close to devotional service. Because some aspect is. Right? It's supposed to be someone who is senior, is supposed to be kind on someone who's junior. So the kindness that we're offering is some training, some teaching. But the methods we're using, the reason we're using it, because I know, they don't know, what is it, you know, I'm so good, they're so bad. Like this, like that, then it's a weed. But it looks like devotional service. Right? Somebody like this. So we have to be very, very careful. We have material desire, we want so many facilities, and this and that, so we endeavor for those facilities. We have to be very careful. Is it a weed, or is it actually a devotional service? I have a particular nature that must be engaged. So is that endeavor of that
the devotional service. Right? It's subtle, very subtle point. Is my working to get more money devotional service, or it only becomes devotional service when I give the fruit? Right? And so if I'm just doing the service, getting the money, I'm getting the money, but then I'm not attending the temple programs, I'm too busy, right? What is it, that song? Busy making progress, right? So I'm very busy doing all these things, getting my money, doing this. I have no time to go to the temple and this and that. Okay, yes, definitely, you know, Janmashtami will show up at some point, you know, definitely at least for prasad, you know? So, okay. But then it may not be exactly called devotional service. When you say, I'm grihastha, I have to take care, that's okay. But it becomes if it's being done for Krishna, or the result is being done for Krishna. Right? So if it's being done for Krishna, means it's being done how Krishna says. So how can it can go on without the sadhana, sadhu sangha service? So then it may not be. It's close. We're a devotee. Family is a devotee. We must maintain them. That is part of the service of a grihastha. It's not such direct service. Therefore, it's not the most ideal situation, but it must be done. Right? That's what it has to be accepted. Right? Everybody has something that they have to accept that may not be so ideal. That's the problem with the material world, is that always some compromises there. Right? You know, like Prabhupada says, the Kshatriyas sometimes have to use violence for their service, or the Brahmins used to have to sacrifice the animals in their service, or the Vaishyas, and you know, so much absorption in the economic development. So it's a compromise. But nature is there, nature needs to be engaged, so it's done. But one has to be very careful to understand that that's not itself pure devotional service. The activity itself is not, it's varnashram. But so if varnashram's engaged, so we have to be very expert. So that's why knowledge is important. So that we can make this differentiate. Knowledge means discrimination. Knowledge means intelligence. Intelligence means discriminating between things. Right? The mind accepts and rejects. That's all. Right? This is good, this is bad. That's its discrimination. I like this, I don't like that. Intelligence doesn't do that. It just simply notes the difference between things or the similarity between things. These are the two functions of the intelligence. Like that. Samas, and one's putting together is samas, and taking apart is a vidyakti. No, I don't know. Remember? It's two functions of the intelligence. So it does this. So it tells the difference between things, takes things, analyzes them, breaks it apart, and then once it's broken apart, then it finds the thing, puts them together. Oh, this and this go together. This and that go together. All these things like that. So it's useful. It means the mind, then we're engaged in the emotional aspects. But the intelligence then also has to be engaged to discriminate between matter and spirit. Within matter, which aspects of matter are useful for devotional service, which are not. And within spirit, then which is higher levels, lower levels, what is our position. So therefore, intelligence is important. So Krishna, Gita gives us intelligence. That's the thing. That's the platform of the Gita, is teaching us how to use the intelligence in Krishna's service. Because that intelligence will give us liberation. It will free us from the material contamination. Okay. Yeah. For him, the dirt of material life is altogether vanquished. Samsara malanashanam. Next verse. Gita sugita kartavya kim anyai shastra vistarai yasvayam padmanabhasya mukta padma vinishrita. Because Bhagavad Gita is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one need not read any other Vedic literature. One need only attentively and regularly hear and read Bhagavad Gita. In this present age, people are so absorbed in mundane activities that it is not possible for them to read all the Vedic literatures. But this is not necessary. This one book, Bhagavad Gita, will suffice.
because it is the essence of all Vedic literatures, and especially because it is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Gita Mahatmya 4. So in the Vedas, then you have all knowledge. All knowledge is in the Vedas. But it is very hidden. How it is written in there, it is very, very unique, the Vedic knowledge. Everything is there. Everything comes out of there. Everybody reads this and gets all kinds of unique philosophies. Some get the proper philosophy. But besides the proper philosophy, there's six other non-proper philosophies. So it creates a problem. So then, from here, then then from there, you get what's called the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas then explain how to use this Vedic verses for performing ritualistic activities. And from these ritualistic activities, then human life is prosperous. Dharma, artha, kama, you can gain from this. Then, what is the hidden meanings behind this? What is the esoteric aspects of this? And that is explained in the Aranyakas, the third part of the Vedas. So that one actually understands what's the purpose of the ritual you're doing, why you're doing it. Otherwise, you're just doing it to do it. But one should know why you're doing it. Then you get more benefit. And besides that, then you can start to see subtleties. Because to be able to see the difference between matter and spirit needs some subtlety. So this starts that process. Means the Brahmanas then create fineness. So material, you know, fineness. But then that has to go a step farther, that the fineness has to get more fine to tell between matter and spirit. If one's too gross, it's very hard to tell the difference between matter and spirit. So one has to refine by the Vedic process up to the upper ends, up to goodness. Then from goodness, one can start to have knowledge, be illuminated. Then the Aranyakas then take it to start to see that this ritual then connects to this higher aspect, and this one to this, and these energies, and so many subtle things. Then, the fourth one is the Upanishads, which tell the actual transcendental meaning of the Vedas. So that then gives liberation, moksha. So then Dharma, Artha, Kama, and moksha can be obtained through the study of these four aspects of the Veda. Now, it's very vast, all that. All the Vedas, all the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Upanishads, plus the language is very difficult. If you want to really appreciate it, you would have to know the grammar, you would have to know the vocabulary, and you have to be quite vast knowledge to really appreciate. Plus, you would have to understand the ritual, then you see how the ritual is done, and it starts to make sense. Then you can apply this theory to the practical, and start to make connections between them by how the ritual is done, what's the purpose of that ritual, and what's the philosophy in Upanishads. But that takes a lot of contemplation oneself. So there's a lot of speculations there. So then the Gita is the essence of the Upanishad. So this is Gita Upanishad. And we see in here, then Krishna is telling karma and jnana. He's telling all these different things. Yoga, everything's explained. So whatever would be in the Vedas would be in here. Because all activities come out of the Brahmanas. Right? And then all of this philosophy comes out of the Upanishads. So all the karma and jnana is there. So this is there. And then the subtleties that you get from yoga, then that's also explained in the Gita. So the Gita then is the essence of all the Vedic literatures. Therefore, one need not read all these other literatures. One doesn't have the time. People don't have the inclination. Nor do they have really the taste or qualification. So then, therefore, it's pointed out here from the Gita Mahatmya that just this one book is enough. You study this, your life will become perfect. You'll know how to do all activities, how to engage them, what is the purpose of all activities, what is the goal of all activities. So then it becomes very, very good. It's the perfect literature.
Bharatam Marita Saradasyam Vishnu Vaktarad Vini Shritam Gita Gango Rakam Pitva Punar Janma Navidite. One who drinks the water of the Ganges attains salvation. So what to speak of one who drinks the nectar of Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is the essential nectar of the Mahabharata, and it is spoken by Lord Krishna himself, the original Vishnu. Gita Mahatmya 5. Bhagavad Gita comes from the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Ganges is said to emanate from the lotus feet of the Lord. Of course, there is no difference between the mouth and the feet of the Supreme Lord, but from an impartial study, we can appreciate that Bhagavad Gita is even more important than the water of the Ganges. Here we see then is also the difference between Vapu and Vani. Right? Vapu is important, it's purifying, being in the association. Srila Prabhupada says, just being in the association of the spiritual master, one unknowingly advances, one doesn't know how. One is just sitting there, one is advancing. But more important, if we make an impartial study, then what is the instruction is more important. That is the most important. Because the instruction then, actually, you can always appreciate, you can always apply in different situations, because the principle is always applicable. Basically, any situation, everything. Because all situations in that are coming from the Lord. That means everything is connected to the Lord. So then the philosophy is coming from the Lord, is describing the Lord, is the Lord. Therefore, we can apply it anywhere. Small, big, anything. So the more it's contemplated, and the more it's practiced, the more we can apply it. Then it's a matter, we gain it. It's a matter of practice, and this gives us realization. So it's the essential nectar of the Mahabharata. So Mahabharata said that whatever is in Mahabharata means you may find things, and whatever is in other scriptures, it will be in Mahabharata. There's nothing that's not described that's not in Mahabharata. But what's in Mahabharata may not be in other scriptures. So Mahabharata, then everything's in there. Everything's touched on. Maybe not in great detail, but everything's there. It's complete. Whatever's there in all the Vedic literatures is there in the Mahabharata. So it's, you know, this is the essence of it. Because we see from there, we gain dharma. It's mentioned if you want to learn dharma, then we study the itihasas. Right, so Mahabharata, Ramayana, these are for us, for the Vaishnavas, these are the main itihasas. These are our interests. Because they're about the Lord and the Lord's devotees. So then in this we see all the activities, everything is being done. Right? How the Pandavas behave in so many situations. When they're kings, how they behave, when they're in the forest, how they behave, you know, how just how they do everything and how they connect all that to the Lord. It's very important. So the Gita then, so all dharma is there and how to connect it. But sometimes it's not necessarily so obvious, the connection, because it is the Lord's pastimes. So for the Lord to enjoy these pastimes, then it's going on as if it is ordinary mundane. Ordinary mundanity. It appears that way, right? Ramachandra's wife is kidnapped and he's lamenting, and it looks like an ordinary king and his loses his, you know, ordinary wife, and he laments in an ordinary way, and all these things. But it's the Lord's pastimes. His yoga maya is there. But from this we understand what is the relationships, how the dealings are there, attachment, detachment. Because he's so attached, so much problem is there. Same time as his duties, he's dutiful as a king, Sita is a wife, Hanuman is a servant, Vibhishan and Shatrughna as friends, you know, comrades, like this. So you learn how everybody relates to each other. What is their interaction between themselves? How is the proper way? But the most essential is why one's doing that. One is doing that to purify oneself so that one can go back to Godhead. One can purify himself from this material energy and go back to the spiritual realm. So that's not necessarily so obvious. So since it's not so obvious, we may get caught up in the story and the passion and the emotions and so many things. Then we may miss the point.
you know, how it's applied, all these different things. So then the Gita then tells us what is that essence, how it's supposed to be connected to the Lord. What is that connection? This the Gita tells us. So this is what's special about the Gita, why the Gita is the essence. So then, yeah. And then that essence then is spoken by the Lord Himself, not by anyone else, but by the Lord Himself. So therefore, everybody accepts bathing in the Ganges. Anyone who follows the Veda then accepts the purity of the Ganges. And the Ganges is first, right? Then the other rivers. Ganga cha Jamuna cha Saraswati na, like this. So Ganga is first. Ganga is the prominent river. Ganga is the prominent river. So everyone and everybody will accept that one becomes purified by engaging in these activities. Right? Everybody becomes purified by engaging in these activities. But here he's pointing out that the instruction is more important. It doesn't mean bathing in the Ganges stop. It means instruction is more important. Otherwise, then it's just sentiment, right? Dharma without, as we discussed yesterday, dharma without philosophy is sentiment. Maybe Haribol? Maybe we can move this side. Give more space. Sarvo Panisharo Kavo Dogda Gopala Nandana Parto Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdam Gitam Ritam Mahat. This Gita Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all the Upanishads, is just like a cow. And Lord Krishna, who is famous as a cowherd boy, is milking this cow. Arjuna is just like a calf. And learned scholars and pure devotees are to drink the nectarine milk of Bhagavad Gita. So from here, then we see it's a very personal thing, is that the Upanishads, I mean, it's the Vedas. Veda is considered mother. Right? Guru is father, Veda is mother. So mother nourishes. So here the example of the cow then is very appropriate. Right? Cow is accepted as very good mother. And everybody benefits by drinking the milk of the cow. So then one can gain so much from there. Like that. So that's very good. But now in here, yeah. And Krishna is a cowherd boy. So he's taking care of this cow. Therefore we can see that the cow will be very well protected, well taken care of, and it will be very naturally very happy, and so much it will be able to give. Whatever is necessary will be able to give. Cow is taken care of properly, then it is, they're happy, then they give milk. And if not, they don't. Like that. If every day exactly at the same time, then they're fed or bathed, or everything happens very regular, everything's very clean and very sattvic atmosphere, very peaceful, very pleasant, then cows are very, very happy and they give plenty of milk. But if not, things are irregular, or they're dirty, or people don't deal nicely, then they give less milk. They are not satisfied. So then Krishna, because he's the cowherd, we can understand this cow will be, the Veda will be very happy, and will be very prosperous. Now, Arjuna is the calf. So then here is who will take. Depending on who will take, then that's what is given. As we see, when Prithu Maharaj milks the earth, depending upon who is sent as the calf, then the earth gives that thing. So that's what's important. The calf then becomes very important, right? Cow gives milk because calf is there, or at least the Indian cows. Western cows aren't so particular. But Indian cows, then they give milk when calf is there. Right? So depending upon the calf, you'll get that kind of milk. So he is a pure devotee, surrendered to Krishna. Therefore, you're going to get that kind of milk. Right? We're not going to get Dharma, Artha, and Kama milk. We're going to get Moksha milk. We're going to get devotional milk. By drinking this milk, then one will develop one's love for Krishna. That is an important thing. So even though it is delineating all these aspects of karma and jnana and yoga, and getting into all kinds of technical details, engaging the intelligence. But it is because of Arjuna is the one who is hearing this. Therefore, it is given in a way to develop one's love for Krishna. Right? He's not, Krishna's not just training just some kshatriya how to do his duty properly. He's training the kshatriya how to do your duty to please Krishna so that you become God conscious and go back to Godhead. You develop your love for Krishna. That's what's important. So you teach one, you teach them all. The important thing is he's not talking about the specifics of kshatriya dharma. He's talking about how to engage your dharma in the Lord's service. So whether it's any of the varnas, any of the ashrams, you just take one, understand that, you can understand them all. The principle is the same. So whatever our position in life, then we can engage ourselves in the Lord's service. Then this becomes perfect. So because Arjuna is the calf, therefore we're getting this Gita Upanishad. That's there. Otherwise one's not getting it. That is the point here. And so then this milk is to be drunk by learned scholars and pure devotees. By taking it, then it develops their love for Krishna, increases their actual understanding. If they're scholars, they'll understand the conclusions. If they're devotees, it will increase their affection for Krishna. We see that one devotee in South India, Lord Chaitanya met. He couldn't read the Gita. He was told he should read, but he was illiterate. So he's sitting, he has the Gita sitting upside down. And he's crying. And so everyone's laughing at him. They know he can't read and he's sitting there reading. Guru told him to read. He doesn't know how to read. So they're all laughing. He can't follow. What kind of Brahma? Lord Chaitanya noticed, but then why is he crying? Right? And it doesn't seem to be he's just lamenting materially that I'm so foolish and all these people are harassing me and I'm so unfortunate and miserable on material platform. It seemed to be something different. So then Lord Chaitanya inquired, well, why, it doesn't appear that you're so scholarly here, so, but why are you, and you're sitting with the Gita, it doesn't appear you can read it because it's backwards. So why are you crying? And he says, I'm just thinking of how the Lord has so much love for his devotee that he has come as his chariot driver, serving the Lord, right? The chariot driver is Shudra, right? The Kshatriya is in the position, is in the seat, and then he's assisted by the charioteer. But here God, who's the Lord of everyone, is taking the position as the servant of his devotee, right? Should be God's in the seat, the devotee is serving. No, but here God is taking the subservient position, and his devotee is sitting. So because of this, he is just appreciating that affection between the Lord and his devotees. So because of that, then he's crying. So Lord Chaitanya says, you have understood the Gita. All these others who are harassing these others, they don't know. So the devotees, then they get this from the Gita, right? This nectarian milk, because it's the exchange between the Lord and his devotees. Ekam shastram devaki putra gitam. Eko devo devaki putra eva. Eko mantras tasya namani yani. Karamapyekam tasya devasya seva. Gita Mahatmya 7. In this present day, people are very much eager to have one scripture, one God, one religion, and one occupation. Therefore, ekam shastram devaki putra gitam. Let there be one scripture only, one common scripture for the whole world, Bhagavad Gita. Eko devo devaki putra eva. Let there be one God for the whole world, Sri Krishna. Eko mantras tasya namani. And one hymn, one mantra, and one prayer. The chanting of his name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Karamapyekam tasya devasya seva. And let there be one work only, the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone wants to simplify something that's, you know, you just do this, everybody does it, and it works. So then here, the Gita Mahatmya is then recommending that this one shastra, by this, everybody can work. No matter what your occupation is, what your dharma is, you can perfect it by following this. It doesn't matter. You want to be a better Buddhist, better Christian, better Jain, better Jew, anything. By following this, you can actually understand the conclusions of any religious process. Because this gives. It gives the perfect. And everyone's searching for the Lord, searching for the Absolute. So that Absolute is Krishna. Everything's coming from Him. He is, demigods are coming from Him. He is God. The Brahman is coming from Him. And even when the living entities merge, they merge into where? Into him. Right? And then they're asleep, so things are not happening. It's void. Right? So, like this, then everything, it's all him. And it's all in connection with him. So then, every literature, its perfection can be found in Gita. One mantra, then the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then is the perfection. All mantras come from this mantra anyway. Originally there's Hare Krishna, then you get the Kam Gayatri. From Kam Gayatri you get Brahma Gayatri. Then in this material world, then the Brahma Gayatri then manifests the Purusha Shukta, that manifests the Veda, then that manifests all the other Shastras. So we can see whatever mantra is there, it actually originates in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Just, it doesn't necessarily look like that. Because they'll see Veda was Om was first, then all these things, Veda, and then these other Shastras manifested later. But they're just manifesting what's already there. It means when you have a reflection, what's closest you'll see first. Right? In the reflection, the root of the tree is the first thing that's there. Not the top. So therefore, what's the top on this side, you see is the bottom on that side. So therefore, the highest is the Bhagavat understanding. But that's the last to manifest on the material platform. So therefore, then the Brahma Gayatri, Om, and then this side, Om, Bhurbhuvasva, like this, is manifest. So all mantras, is the perfect, you know that mantra? All mantras you know. So it's the best of all mantras. Everything will be perfect by that. In fact, if you don't use any other mantra and you just use this, it's perfect. Right? Sometimes one may be distracted. He has a particular desire. I'll chant this mantra to this demigod or to this form of the Lord. And then I will get that perfection. But if you just chant Hare Krishna, then all that will be gained. No need of anything else. And one service, service to the Supreme Lord only. So whatever your position, then you engage it in the Lord's service. Doesn't matter what it is, what you're doing. It's just engaged in the Lord's service. Then it will give perfection. Okay. Any comments or questions on this? No? And the last point in the introduction is the disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo vidu. Bhagavad Gita 4.2. This Bhagavad Gita as it is received through this disciplic succession. So it starts with Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Madhva, Padmanabha, Nirihari, Madhva, Akshobhya, Jayatirtha, Jnanasindhu, Jayaniti, Vidyaniti, Jayendra, Jayadharma, Purushottama, Brahmanya Tirtha, Vyasa Tirtha, Lakshmipati, Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, and also Nityananda, Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya, Rup, Surup, and Sanatan, 24th, and Raghunath and Jiva, Krishnadas, Narottam, Vishwanath, and Baladev and Jagannath, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gauri Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So in here we see is that Krishna spoke to Brahma. So Krishna directly initiated Brahma. Then Brahma initiated Narad. And Narad then also then received instruction from Brahma and from Krishna. Narada then instructed Vyas. Vyas then Madhva then visited Vyas, then in the Bhadarika Ashram in the Himalayas, and then from there he heard from him about the Vedanta Sutra. He had a commentary and he discussed that with Madhva and it was approved by him. So here, though Madhva was initiated by someone else, Vyas is his Siksha Guru. Then we have so many here of the Madhva line, from Padmanabha down to Lakshmipati Tirtha. Then he initiated Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri, then Ishwara Puri, Nityananda and Advaita, and then Lord Chaitanya, then Rupa and Sanatan, like this. But we see in here, the most essential point is instruction. Right? This is the most essential point. Diksha is there. Everyone here has some diksha line. It may be exactly in line what's here, may not be exactly in line what's here. That doesn't matter. That's the secondary. The feet are good, but what's coming from the mouth is more important. Right? Therefore, the instruction of the Lord is more important than the Ganga, what's coming from his feet. Though both are important, right? You would take bath in the Ganga. That must be there. You have to do something with the body. But the intelligence and the mind must be engaged with the instruction. So that's the most essential. Otherwise, diksha simply means someone who is a practicing person in whatever is the discipline, Vedic, Panchratric, or Bhagavat. They are practicing it, and they have received from a bona fide person, then they can give that to the next person. And that potency will be transferred. That's the basic principle. But conclusion of the Shastra and how to go back to Godhead, that's a different thing. Just because you have Panchratric initiation or Vaidika initiation or the Bhagavad initiation, but without instruction, one may not advance very nicely. Very rare that one would advance very nicely. Even we see someone does advance very nicely, it is understood that they've done devotional service previously. So they have received that instruction. It is there in the heart. But by practice, then it manifests. So without that association, it doesn't happen. Because that's Krishna's process. Krishna's process is you serve the devotees. You serve him through his devotees. And that means we are serving the devotees. And because devotees are already there, and their servants are there, we don't know about all this. So then the servants come to us. So we're serving the servants and the servants of Krishna. This is how it's working. So the most important thing is the instruction, the mood. Right? Just because the diksha, the perfection of the diksha is it will remove the material contamination and it will produce the spiritual form. Right? And it's perfection in Baba. Right? That is the process. Means the Diksha Guru, the duties start at Bhajana Kriya and they end at Sarup Siddhi. That's where they end. That's where they come to. So when it gets there, then it is finished. Technically. Because the Diksha is supposed to free you from material contamination. Because that's the only reason you need the Pancharatric or Vaidika Diksha anyway. You have to follow rules and regulations because you have a gross and subtle body. Those must be removed. You want a spiritual body, you have to remove the material body. Right? The material body is based on our subtle body. Because we have these desires, therefore, we already have a spiritual form, but we can't operate it. So until you've removed this, what we think is our form, how are we going to take advantage of what is our form? Right? So diksha is for that. It's for the conditioned soul. Siksha is the how to gain entrance into the Lord's association. Even you have a spiritual form doesn't mean you get into the association. Right? Otherwise, how is it the gopis didn't get into Krishna's association? Because they didn't have the mood. They didn't associate with the eternal associates of Krishna to gain that mood. So they didn't know how to actually serve Krishna on the topmost platform. That was what was necessary. So therefore they knew enough to get into Vrindavan. They knew enough to have their surup. They didn't know enough to actually come to the point of perfection. Of actually the topmost platform of devotional service. So that's by siksha. By hearing, seeing, associating with. Right? Not that they sit down and have the class, just how they do is the class. Right? You have to have a class because we're conditioned, we forget.
right? You have a class and everybody thinks, okay, something's happening. You just walk down the road, nothing's happening, right? But we see for that one sadhu, right, that Krishna is explaining in Uddhava Gita, by walking down the road, that is his class. Everything's his class. How his body functions, how it digests his food afterward, that's his class. Right? Everything's his class. So that's the thing, it's 24 hours a day, whatever you're doing, you can see Krishna in something and take the knowledge that's in the Shastras and apply it. Right? It's very advanced. So generally we have to create a form of something, then we go, okay, some philosophy is going to happen here. Right? But if we're walking down the road, then, you know, we're just trying to find a rickshaw and, you know, it's too noisy and disturbing and get away from the beggars and, you know, get away from the cheating rickshaw wallahs and watch out for the bull that's walking down the middle of the road and, you know, all these things. But, you know, it's like philosophy is something else. Philosophy means you sit down in a class and you have a book and you look at it and all that, and then at one point you close that. And then you go about day-to-day life. No, but the actual position is everything's a class. You're learning from everything. So that, then, as one advances, and one sees, but how somebody did something, their mood, their tone of voice, how they even just physically moved, you learn from that. You can see from that what is happening. What is the position? What's the mentality? Therefore, we don't see that the gopis, yes, you know, it's not Radharani sits down and says, okay, now we're going to have a gopi class, you know, call all the gopis here, and then, okay, see, and then they hold up a picture, okay, this is Krishna, right? He's a boy, right? We're girls, right? Girls like boys, right? Okay, now so many boys are in Vrindavan, but now if you check this guy out, he's the best looking boy, right? Okay, Dharma's there, you have your husband and this and that, but here in Vrindavan, Paraki is cool, so therefore, that's the next class, how to keep from getting caught. But first of all, this is the man, right? This is the guy. No, they don't do like that. They don't have to have a class. They just, by their activities, you understand what's going on. But they didn't associate. So they had perfected diksha, but siksha, they weren't advanced enough in. They knew enough siksha to get them out of the material world, into Vrindavan, but not enough to get them into the Lord's direct association. So we see siksha goes beyond the diksha. And that's why, even though the word diksha is defined as transcendental knowledge or divine knowledge, right? And then this way some unscrupulous people will twist that into then saying that therefore you have to take diksha from, you know, some nitya siddha somewhere, take your choice, you know, some like Prabhupada, some like Bhakti Vinod, some like, you know, someone else, you know, it's like that. You take your pick, it doesn't matter. But the point is the diksha is secondary. The primary is the siksha. Therefore we see in these lines, everybody has diksha lines, and who's in this list here are not in the same diksha lines. They're not in the same diksha lines. Though we will see generally they'll all go back to the Goswamis. Right? And then from Lord Chaitanya, then it'll again go out all over the place. But that's not what's important. They have diksha from a bona fide line, that's enough. But what is their siksha? That's what we want to know. Baladev, he's not initiated in the Gaudiya line. He's a Madhva. Right? Of course, we're all Madhvas. But he's directly a Madhva without anybody in between, right? So from him in his diksha line, you would probably go from Lakshmipati to, you know, down to somebody else and get to Baladev, and there would be no Lord Chaitanya and Ishwarpuri in between, no Goswami. But that doesn't disqualify him from being one of our acharyas, right? Because he knows our siksha. That's what's important. You follow the siksha, that is who you are. The diksha is just a formal how to connect. Of course, there's etiquettes of this also. If you're saved by one particular line, that's your line that you would naturally take diksha. You don't switch around. Then it becomes, that's a Vedic principle. You are born in one line. You're in a particular gotra.
and you are therefore study a particular Veda that's under a particular Rishi, you don't just jump around in the various lines of the Vedas because you like a different one and a different Rishi. It's an offense to the Rishi. Like that. So therefore, if one jumps around, it's an offense to who is the founder. Like that. You go from one to the other, then it's an offense. You may say it's the same. It doesn't, whatever. But it's, there's some etiquette there. But the main point we're making here is that the siksha is the most important. Therefore, this line is bona fide. It is the bona fide line. Because the pure teachings that is there of Lord Chaitanya, the pure essence that is there, then is given in this line. And if we follow this line, then we will get that perfection. Then we will see Krishna in this unique, special way that has never been given before. So many others worship Krishna, worship Radha and Krishna. But how Lord Chaitanya is giving it, that hasn't been given before. That is special. Right? And it's not even this Manjari Bhav. The Nimbarkas have been talking about Manjari Bhav for the last 5,000 years. So it's not that either. Right? It's the particular mood of Radha and Krishna. That hasn't been given. That no one else has tasted. Right? So that is special. So therefore one should be very careful to stick to this line, not go here, there, so many places. Otherwise then there'll be an offense or a loss from the siksha side, and by jumping around, then you create offenses on the diksha platform also. You're initiated in this line, and then you give it up and go and get initiation in another line, then don't worry. If there is someone at the end of the other line, they're not going to take this seriously. Don't worry. Don't worry. They will not accept you. You may think, that guru may think, but the people before them are not thinking of you. Right? Bhajana Kriya means the Lord takes this person as serious. This person's serious. But when they start jumping around in lines, how are they going to take seriously? How can they take seriously? How do they not take seriously? You may think so, because emotionally you may like it. But what's important here is not our emotions, it's what Krishna's emotions and the internal associates of Krishna, their emotions. So if they don't like it, then what's the benefit? Even though it makes us happy today. Any questions on this? Yes. How by?
Diksha.
We elevate ourselves. Yes. So diksha, we can become. How do we purify ourselves by taking diksha? Diksha means to see there's a process. And without process, you don't get a goal. Right? It means goal is obtained by some activity. It's not static, it's dynamic. That's the principle. That's the weakness of the impersonalist path, is that they consider that by doing nothing you're going to get something, but nothing is gained by doing nothing. Right? You gain something by doing something. Right? Problem is the karmis are doing something, they're getting result, but it's the wrong result. Right? So the activity's not wrong. It's the mentality of what they want. Because you do something for a result, right? 10 people are cooking, right? But they have different results. One person just wants to eat. That's their goal of cooking. Another person wants to please another person because they're the friend or something. Another person, they have a guest and they want to impress. Or someone else is, you know, the prestige and I am the best cook, so therefore I'm cooking these things, I'll be recognized. Someone else wants something from someone, so I'll cook them something they like, and then while they're eating and they're happy, then I'll, you know, kind of like drop a hint at what we're interested in. You know, like a business lunch or, you know, whatever. So, like that. Cooking is going on, but it has so many different goals.
So the activity is not the problem, it's what the activity is being done for. So bhajana kriya means activity, and the activity then is given by God. And in this, the principle is you have to follow a servant of the Lord. Right? You have to follow. You want to enter into a particular rasa with the Lord. Then you have to follow whoever is the head in that line. Like that. There's no other way. You can't approach the Lord directly. He's not interested in that. There's no interest on his part at all. Because then it's impersonal. Because we're not accepting the Lord's devotees. So then just us and God, where's the rasa? How are you going to have... Lord is always surrounded by loving devotees. Where's the rasa going to happen? Just you and God? It doesn't happen. It's you, so many devotees, and God. Right? Therefore, then it has to... This parampara must be established. Is that there's Krishna. Then there's that leading devotee. Then there's those eternal associates who follow that leading devotee. They've always been there. Then there's the eternal associates that are following those followers of the leading devotee. And then, somewhere along the line, then there's us, down the parampara. But already the first few levels of positions are already, they've eternally been there. Then how are we going to connect? We're just going to walk in? No, we're coming in by, through the grace of the devotee. And because that devotee is dear to Krishna, then because you are dear to that devotee, you will become dear to Krishna. Therefore, diksha is important. That's why it must be there. Without diksha, the process won't work. So there has to be diksha. And it has to be coming from bona fide source. That is actually the potency, the line is the current, the transcendental current is working. Then it's accepted that you are connected. But of that, that doesn't stop there. That's not perfection. Perfection then is taking the instructions and following them. So the instructions are of two kinds. One, because the guru then has two aspects, siksha and diksha. So one, the diksha aspect means he's teaching you how to engage the material nature so that you can purify it and remove it. So in other words, then there's so many rules what not to do. Right? Like that, you get your yama, what not to do, you know? If I have to follow the four regular principles, because these sinful activities will stop your devotion. Then niyama, what you should do. And by following those, then you'll be purified, because that's engaged in the Lord's service. So then the Diksha Guru teaches that. But now, how to develop the mood of that servant? How to develop the mood of a particular line. That's the siksha aspect. Right? So the best is one person is doing both, but it can be done by two people. Diksha will only be one, but siksha may be many. This is a big topic in itself. But the basic principle is this, is that so it must be there. Otherwise, how are you going to free yourself from your conditioned nature? One can't. One has to follow a process, and it can't be our made-up process, because the thing itself is the same. You cook. Material bodies used, mind, material elements. So what makes it purifying? In that it's connected to the Lord, so it becomes empowered, spiritualized. That makes it. So through that diksha, it becomes empowered. Then you can use the material, gross and subtle body in the Lord's service because it has that power. It's connected to the current, the transcendental current. Then it will purify you until it disappears. And it's replaced by the spiritual form. Then that aspect is over. It's on the transcendental platform. Then siksha is the main, that is the important element. That's what takes you beyond. It means diksha will get you up to liberation. But siksha will bring you to liberation and take you beyond. So that's why both have to be done. Does that make sense?
Yes? No?
Yeah.
Ends here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitya Gaur ki.
Devotional activities. So these devotional activities they are never accepted by Krishna.
No, they're accepted. But it's not as good as if Diksha is there.
And the position
because
of
Diksha,
the
Diksha means there's some surrender.
Ah.
Like that. While Diksha is not there, generally means there's something is lacking in surrender. Ah. Because the point is we need to follow. The principle is we have to follow somebody. But by performing devotional activities, there's always benefit. It's devotional
like,
activities.
Like fasting. If someone is non-initiated but he fasts on Ekadashi, will he get results?
Yeah, of course. There always those. But the point is you want to become accepted in a particular group in the spiritual realm. You want to be accepted in one of the realms. And within the realm, you want to be accepted in a particular service, you know, or group of service. So you have to be accepted by those in that line.
You have mentioned in your class that the spiritual form is already there?
Yeah. Well, it's there. But the thing is because of our conditioned nature, it becomes covered. We can't operate. But it's already there.
You have evidence of that?
Prabhupada mentions that.
Prabhupada, but in the scripture, you have some evidence?
That. I've heard that Jiva Goswami mentions in his sandarbhas, I'm not sure which sandarbha, that when the living entity comes into the material world and they leave their spiritual form kind of at the, you know, in the cloakroom. You know, when you go to any place, you have a place for hanging the coats and all that before you go
and
inside.
It becomes inactivated. It was activated and it can become
yeah, it's not activated.
Excuse me. Please remember to speak to him.
Okay.
If you haven't got the number, you take it from me.
Yeah, no. I think we have
the number.
Yeah. That's the spiritual form is there, but we can't operate. We can't operate. Because you have to be on the Brahma-Bhuta platform to, you know, beginning stage to work it. Because as long as there's some conditioning here, the mind will bring us here, right? Because the mind is conditioned. The mind creates the gross body. So as soon as the mind has a material desire, it has to have a gross body to affect that desire.
So the stay bath is intrinsic to the living entity. It's not acquired. Stay bath is not acquired.
Basically, it's natural. It's natural for the living entity. Better to say natural than intrinsic.
Because it seems like...
Because the point is one could change it. Though generally no one changes it. But just like you like a particular fruit, someone else likes a different fruit. You could change that, but generally you don't. You like it, but why should you change?
In one essay by Bhaktisiddhanta, Brahmana and Vaishnavas, someone has pointed me out that Bhaktisiddhanta is saying that because the living entity was in Shantaras originally, therefore he fall down from Shantaras, he can fall down into the material world. But from another rasa, more higher than Shantaras, as soon as he start in Dasya, and what to speak of Sakya and Vatsalya and Madhu, he cannot fall down.
No, that's fine. That's true.
So the fact that we are
no,
now
wait. Stop here. But you have to understand, Shantaras is limited by a particular form, or Shantaras is a mentality. Rasa is form or mentality?
Both are linked together.
Here, just answer this. Rasa is form or mentality?
Mentality, but mentality
creates
a form.
Yes, okay. But in the neutral state, one can have any form that could develop. That's why it said it's the natural position of the living entity. That's why they use this word. It's the natural position of the living entity to develop love for the Lord, to have love for the Lord. That's his natural position. But he's neutral to the Lord. Therefore, you can call it Shantaras. Right? But that doesn't mean that Shantaras is his spiritual form.
that what has to understand.
They don't,
this you have to understand, is that tatastha means what? See, we're not describing Surup Shakti or Antaranga Shakti. We're describing tatastha Shakti. So tatastha Shakti in its tattva form, right? Tattva nature is neutral. Neutral means shanta, right?
So neutral, that means that's why you can go from one side to another.
So that means any jiva in its manifestation as jiva tattva, as tattva, not rasa, is neutral. But that doesn't mean that his natural inherent rasa is not something else.
But they say it develops.
It develops. Yes, but the point
originally
is
it was not.
Yes, but yeah. Surup Shakti is, I mean, the tasta is in the middle. And therefore it can come under one or under the other. So when it comes under one, then it develops a material form. It comes under the other, it develops the full spiritual. The gopis that didn't go to the rasa dance, what body were they in? Were they in cow bodies or tree bodies? Or a rock? Because that's Shantaras. But were they actually in really absorbed in conjugal ras? No, they had the bodies of gopis, but they were slightly neutral. Otherwise, why is it that they weren't allowed to go? Why is it they were attached to their house and all that? They liked Krishna, but they liked what was in the house. So if you read the purport by Vishwanath, the form is not fully transcendental. It's the sarup. That's the difference between sarup and vastu. Vastu means it's completely spiritual. There's no difference in what it looks like. It'll look exactly the same, but the sarup still is there, that it can go either way. Because otherwise, how do they enact their independence? Otherwise, if it's vastu, how can they take advantage of material life? They can't. So the sarup is there, that it is in the spiritual world. It is practically spiritual, because you're right on the edge. Is it spiritual or is it material? Right? It can't be material. It's not fully. It's right on the edge. Right? So therefore, then if they don't come in contact with the nitya siddhas, then that from that neutrality develops inimicalness. That's also in that book. This is page 92 or 98. He explains how the living entity falls. Then he becomes inimical. Then he's put into the material world. He's taken out of the Lord's realm. Out of, you know, this Boma Vrindavan. And then he comes in and he's born as Brahma. And then from Brahma, then it's downhill from there. Right? But he starts in neutral. But it doesn't mean that his form is from that. But as he develops that love, so those gopis develop that love in that way, then that bhav then creates the fully spiritual gopi form. Then you get yam kama krodha sahaja prani agamiti vatsalya mahabhuta. Then you get that. But it's there, it's neutral. Neutral means neutral. You have to accept tatastha means tatastha. But it has its form. But it does there. Otherwise, how is
but
it...
But the form had been activated, was never activated? Or
activated, but it's not being utilized properly. So it's not fully developed. Fully developed form means it's imbued with transcendental love. That is a fully spiritual form. So it's a spiritual form, but it's not fully spiritual. I mean, this is also this is also spiritual. We see it as material. It's Krishna. So therefore, how can we call it material? You understand this point? If you understand this point, it removes a lot of problems. Okay. This is Brahman.
Okay. That's Krishna's energy.
Huh?
That is Krishna's energy.
Yeah. So therefore, that form is also Brahman.
But
right,
not,
but
not
now,
eternal. Not it will.
That's it will form is always there. No, it doesn't disappear. It just you're not in the form, or the form is covered. That form doesn't go away.
But table will not go away.
No, this will go away, but that other form won't go away.
Our form.
Yeah, the Swarup doesn't go away.
So, Swarup was from all time in our possession, but vastu is to be acquired.
Vastu you have to gain.
It has to be acquired.
You have to prove yourself. You have to develop love for Krishna. Tatastha means you don't have love, you don't have dislike. You're neutral. But how long can you remain neutral? You can't remain neutral forever.
So our Swarup, as Nitya Krishna does, it can have also the form of a coward boy or...
It could be any form.
But not with love, not with prema. Without prema.
Huh?
Just like a...
That's what he says there. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that, if you read it, is they don't have that love for Krishna. They have that's their natural position. Mm. That jiva, its natural position is to be a cow, or to be a cowherd boy, or to be a gopi, or like that. Mm. Its natural position is that. It has the form of that, but it hasn't developed the full mentality of that. Because that comes in association. You have to go behind these devotees. Mm. You have to fall in line. Therefore the diksha. That's why diksha, because you have to come in line. So if you're conditioned now, you must have the diksha. For them, the diksha means they simply follow instruction. The Bhagavad platform, instruction is the initiation. But you have to be liberated to operate that system. The Bhagavad system on its own is operated by someone who's liberated. If someone's conditioned, then you need the Pancharatrika divided. Like that. So for us, the Pancharatrika is the preferred.
And the Ma mantra, you say that there's no need of other mantra, and you seem to agree that, in Chaita and Chaitamita, it's said also that even without initiation, Ma mantra can be taken. Ma mantra can be taken without waiting for initiation.
It'll work, but the point is the name is Krishna, and Krishna wants to see you fall in line with his devotees.
Same
so even though he doesn't, but see, point is like this: you get another mantra, Pancharatrika Vedic mantra. You're not initiated. You chant it, you won't get anything from it. You'll neither become purified, nothing. Right? So therefore, you'll remain in the same position. But by chanting Hare Krishna, though you're not initiated, it'll bring you to the platform where you actually are qualified to chant those Vedic or Pancharatrik mantras. So the name has done that. But this is his pastime. He wants to see you go through this. It's not just, I want and it happens. It has to be, you want it to happen in the association of devotees, how Krishna wants it. He wants to see, how do you work with other people? You can't work with anybody else. Who wants you? That's the point. It means because if you can't work with anybody, you are not going to like the spiritual world. Because it's too full of people. There's too many people.
Who has to walk together?
Yeah. It means here there's a few. There are millions and millions and millions of gopis. And they all work together. So that's the thing. You have to be able to work with. It means 5,000 or 6,000 is Radharani's assistants. Right? 5,000 or 6,000. You have to be able to work cooperatively with 5,000 or 6,000 other people.
Where you got this number?
That's in Radhakrishna Ganagashtubhya.
Cannot be expanded more?
No, that's the maid servants. Then you include everybody else, that's more. But the specific maid servants, that's 5,000 or 6,000.
Did you say that in Nimbaka they know Manjari Bhav since 500 years?
They talk Raghunuga Bhakti.
But where? They
talk about Manjari, Sahelis, all kinds of things. They're constantly talking about Manjaris. Means all the Raga Raginis are generally all Manjaris. You know? Because their thing is music. Their main service is singing for the deities and all those kind of things like that. That's the main kind of stuff they do. So for them, they're all maidservants. So Manjaris like that. Sukadeva Goswami is their main shakti. You know, like this. So they, all these things are there. Radha Krishna worker, Kunj Seva, all these things. But their mood is totally different. Their approach to who they know as Radha Krishna, that manifestation, they don't know the manifestation we know. But Rupa gives. That they don't know. That's why it's unique. That's why Lord Chaitanya has given something never given before. Because it's something higher, something deeper.
And it's not possible to know one's swarup by one's own effort.
No, not really. You can get a general idea, but
or by some sukriti.
No, unless one has performed the devotional activities to do. But otherwise, it's why would one know? Because the Sarup is to be operated in Krishna's pastimes. And then who are you in the pastime? Who do you follow? Right? Sarup includes Gana. Right? So Gana means parampara. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, if you don't have the parampara on this side...
You say parampara, diksha or shiksha, and Gana is as relation also? They are related?
Everything's related.
So if we are in the parampara of Manjaris, we cannot be a coward boy. We have to be linked with that particular gun.
The point is why worry about those things in the conditioned state?
Yeah.
It's just like the 8-year-old girl is wondering about, you know, so many things in the conjugal relationship. She doesn't have to think about it at all. When she hits 12, she'll understand everything. When you hit liberation, it will be clear. Don't worry about it. You have to get yourself to liberation. And then the others will take it from there. But for us, in this age, you only get to liberation if you have ruchi. Ruchi you only get if anartha nivritti has been done. Anartha nivritti happens because of bhajana kriya. The essential element of bhajana kriya is approaching.
Speed of master.
So that is the whole thing. That's why it's important. Because then they can see, if you can work on this level, you can work on that level. This level is a test for that level. They're simply seeing how you deal with them, that's how you're going to deal with how you deal with people here is how you're going to deal with people there. It's not going to be any different. Right? It's just like the lady. She's carrying her, she's going to the forest, old lady, she picks up sticks. Right? That day she makes an extra big bundle. I guess she found a lot of sticks. She puts it on her head, very heavy, very difficult to carry. She's walking, it falls off her head. By this time she's a little tired, she can't pick it up. She's out in, not in the village, she's outside. She doesn't take her sticks, then she can't sell them, she can't maintain herself. So very difficult for her. So she starts crying and calling out for Krishna, please help me. And Krishna, because they're very sincere, Krishna comes, what do you want? Then she just asks, can you put this on my head? And they go, oh yes, Krishna puts it on her head. And as soon as he puts it on her head, it disappears. Then it strikes her that Krishna came and put this on her head. So she just deals with Krishna like if another man had just walked down the road or another lady said, could you put this on my head? So it just deals with Krishna how you would with anybody else. So the same way as how you deal with the devotees is here is how you're going to deal with the devotees in Vrindavan. So that's why it's first seen that it comes to perfection here, then they'll accept you there. But they're helping. It's not that they just sit back. They want it to help happen. So they'll help, but we have to make that endeavor. Does that make sense?
Who wants to help? Krishna or Krishna alone or Krishna with his
associates? Everybody wants to help.
Everyone wants to help.
We're the ones that are not capable.
But I don't want it to be helped.
Yeah, that's it. That's the problem is us, not them.
It's not the number of people who wants to help you, it's your...
how much we hold on.
How much we hold.
Yeah, because the point is, you know, they only will drag so much. So, Guru, see, is when we're fully surrendered, then Guru can drag. But if we're not, then the etiquette is one shouldn't drag. Like that. Because then it disturbs. We should not disturb the minds of the ignorant. That's the etiquette. So if someone surrenders, then you can be heavy with them and smash the ignorance. You know? So some people take that as Guru is very harsh. But others understand that as Guru is just breaking that ignorance so that one can move on. But otherwise it's not done, so we may not let go on our own. We haven't up to now. We've been here unlimited lifetimes. We haven't let go. We're very happy here. Otherwise, why are we still here? If we weren't happy, we would have gone out of here. Right? When we came in as Lord Brahma, right? Brahma can still understand the Sarup. Right? So as Brahma, then we could have understood this is not nice, not good. And gone back to Godhead from the first appearance in the material world. But since we're here now, not as Lord Brahma, we can understand we didn't do that. Right? it's kind of, you know, by the process of neti-neti, we can understand that we didn't go back to Godhead, we're still here. So therefore, even though we left there, you're still given able to see both. Brahma can see both the spiritual world and here. He can see the Lord's pastimes. The demigods come to him, he goes to the bank of the milk ocean and meditates and sees Vishnu. So he's able to see Vishnu, but he sees the material world. So he's like in the best tathasta position, you know? The best tathasta position. The best tathasta position. So because of that, then he also then, it's just a step down. Then generally the next birth after that would be like Prajapati, the sons of Brahma, you know, great personalities, big, like that, because then they're in a unique position. So they also can kind of have that, but they're a little farther down. And then generally after that, then...
So those who are Prajapati and on the higher planet, they are on their way down or they are...
Not necessarily. It can be up and down, unlimited.
We are just moving up and down.
They may be coming down, they may be going up, but it doesn't matter. In any case, they're still here. That's the problem. They're still in the material.
And you mentioned that for Diksha, it is not so important that the Diksha Guru will be a very elevated person, only if he is bona fide.
It's best, because the point is you need the Siksha. So the point is generally, the person you find who is the person who will give you the siksha and accept diksha from them.
Yeah, so usually your siksha guru is also your diksha guru.
Yeah.
That's why Prabhupada is recommending somewhere he has written that it is best if the diksha guru is on the Uttama platform, yes. Because
but you
if
have
one
to
takes
understand,
from a Madhya.
Uttam starts from Ruchi. Remember that. That may be Kanista Uttam, but it's Uttam. Because they have a taste, so they can give you taste. Because the whole point is...
No, Prabhupada speaks about instruction. He say one will not advance very nicely because of the because the instruction will not be so...
it's not... What's the depth of it is not so much, but here's the instruction. Here's the Uttamanika. That's why you have the system of the founder Acharya. See... It's not a new system either. For Kali Yuga, it is the system that's used by all of the sampradayas. All of them use it. Like that. It's just we need to understand it. Is you always have a founder who gives the instructions, and then you always have those who follow to assist you to follow those instructions.
So we are giving...
you understand this point? So you have the Udarika who liberates the founder. Then you have the Upakarika, or one who serves, or assists. There's the Upakar, means the welfare worker. Right? So for the Ramanujas, Ramanuja is the Udarika. He liberates everyone in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. But he is only going to liberate you if you've approached one of his Upakarikas. And that Upakarika teaches you the teachings of Ramanuja. Or the teachings of Madhva, the teachings of Shankar, the teachings of Nimbarka, or Vallabha. Like that. So for us, then, Srila Prabhupada is our Upakarika. Udarika. And then you have so many others who are Upakarika. So therefore, the system is like that because if it's not perfect, the Upakarika, even if he's not perfect, he's in the line, he can give you diksha, he can give you instruction, but his realization may not be the top, but you can still approach directly the ultimate realization. But if you approach it only on your own, you may not be following it nicely. So you need the experience and the help of others to see that you are following it properly. So still, the process is important.
When they give their parampara, they never take shiksha, diksha, mix, or even shiksha. They only give diksha parampara. But we are giving this mix.
Because this is Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati.
We are criticized for that.
Because, the point is everybody here has a Diksha Pranali. They all have. They may go in this way and that way all over the place. They have it. But that's not the important thing. Their thing is, because their whole thing is Swarup Siddhi, bus. You walk in the door and you walk out of the door with some Swarup Siddhi. But you can't operate it. Right? The 4-year-old girl is sitting in the yajna and getting married. Can she have a child? No. So does she go over and now live with her husband and, you know, all the kinds of nice conjugal pastimes are happening? No. She still stays at her father's house. The boy goes to his house, she stays at her. But she knows that is my husband. Then. But you can't operate it. How do you operate it? Trinadapisunichina, Torapisunichina, Amaninamana, Dinakirtanasa. Without that, no Sarup is operated. They can think they're operating it. It's just like, let us say you have some group and they're having some kind of party, private party. You hear about it. You're not invited. You're not even part of the group. You crash in on it. And you think, yeah, you're here doing this, sitting around talking with everybody. But does anybody actually appreciate you being there? So that's the Swarup Siddhi of these people. They crash in on Krishna's party, but they don't get very far. Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath mentions this in the Raghavartha Chandrika. These people are not appreciated by the eternal residents of the spiritual world. He says it clearly. They don't care about these people. They don't trust them. They just don't trust them. Because, you know, they're not following properly the line. Diksha is the main thing, they take it so cheaply. But what about the siksha? Ashlishyavapada, that's the, how is that being obtained? You want to hear all these things. Why? Because you want to enjoy. But adarshanan marmahatam karotiva, where does it say I want to enjoy there? It doesn't say at all. Why are they want to enjoy? Right? Rupa Goswami is coming, right? And there's a bite on his lip. Raghunath is saying, oh, where is this bite from? Right? So in our line, it's because he knows he so perfectly serves Radharani. When Krishna bites Radharani's lip, it manifests on his lip. But if you go to Radhakund, some say this, but we like to take the direct meaning. Meaning, Krishna bit Rupa Goswami's lip. Why? Because they want to enjoy. Without the diksha, how do you get rid of the desire to enjoy and control? So therefore, what is the platform? What is their surup? What is it? What happiness is it giving to Krishna? Because it's not like Radharani and Rupa Goswami. As you know, adarshanan marma. No, there's it's there. Yes, they talk Manjari and Krishna direct. Goswamis don't talk that. It's not our life. It's not the Krishna we know. Krishna's the enjoyer. He's the Vishaya, not us. So one has to be very careful. It looks like devotional service. It looks like advanced Raganuga Bhakti. But it's not. It only looks. Otherwise, you know, why did the others not care so much for all this? They don't talk about this. They're very careful about it. But they take it so cheaply. Therefore, sahajya. Sahaj means easy. That's the meaning of the term, sahajya. And interesting, sahajya comes in to the Gaudiya line from Buddhism. And Buddhism that's been mixed with the tantric. Because the Buddhists in Bengalis are tantrics. So the Buddhism over there, that's where it became mixed with tantra, like you see in the Tibetan Buddhism and all. It's very tantric. The original Buddhism, there's no tantra. They just walk around and live under a tree. They have no homes, no ritual, no nothing. There's absolutely zero. All they do is just, everything's void, and beg and eat something, and that's it. That's Buddhism. Real Buddhism. Any of the Buddhism you see now is not Buddhism. So when they came to Bengal, then it was became polluted with Tantra. So Sahajya means that into the Gaudiya line, it's Gaudiya Vaishnavism mixed with this Tantric Buddhism. So therefore, that Sahaj aspect of there came in. Like Dadavesh, right? Dadavesh means Vaishnavism mixed with Islam. So that's what all these different Apasampradayas are. They're Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but tinged with something that shouldn't be there. So it looks like it. They talk like it, they roll on the ground like it, but actually doesn't get very far.
I think I wanted to ask you a question about those who are not in a bona fide, one of the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya, who are doing practices and who are even showing bhav and all these things.
Sampradaya bina mantra nishkalam.
Yeah, but it's so what? The bhav? I don't know if who's showing the bhav? Is a Maharashtrian showing the bhav? Or a Madhya Pradesh? Or a Tamil? It's generally a Bengali. And if you know Bengalis, then it's very easy. They're the most emotional of all people. So for them to get into a bhav is very easy. Especially if someone's watching. Those people are in the bhav on their own? No, when people are around. They walk into they've been walking down the road perfectly fine. They walk into the temple perfectly fine. They come in, and then suddenly they fall on the ground. Now if everybody just got up and walked off, then after a while they'd stop. Right? So it's no big deal. It's an easy thing. You can get into it because it's an enjoyment. It's something that can be enjoyed. It's an enjoyable thing. You get the mind, you get into emotion. Why do people watch soap operas? Right? Because you get into someone's emotion and all this. Why do people want to read novels? You know, why is it Mahabharata is more popular than Gita, right? So much emotion. This and that and so many things. So it's very easy. It may take some practice. Huh?
Many people in Vrindavan who are not connected to any sampradaya, but still they are worshipping Radha Krishna and they are practicing.
But,
so what will the ultimate destination
for them? But them you don't worry about. Lord Chaitanya already gave instruction on that. Is that as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, don't worry about the Brajavasis. They're in a different category. They're not talking, we're talking about people that are born in Bengal. We're not talking about people who are born here. They're born here, that's another thing. Krishna is directly their guru. But that's between them and us. It's not something for us to follow. It's not the best path either. They might end up as a dog or a turtle also. Or a pig, you know.
They're not only outsiders. They
come don't worry about them. Coming from outside is a different thing. They're nivasi. Remember that. Never become proud. If you're born here, you're a vasi. You come from outside, you're a nivasi. Though, technically, they'll be called brajvasis. But as far as sadhana goes, they have their own path. We don't worry about it. It's between them and Krishna. Right? It's between them and Krishna. So you cannot worry about it. You cannot take their example. You should not associate intimately with them. Otherwise, it's against Lord Chaitanya's instructions. And if you don't follow Lord Chaitanya's instructions, how you become a Brajavasi? Right? Do we want to become one of the Brajabasis here, or do we want to become one of the Brajabasis there? That's your choice. You want to become here, then you try. But if you want to become there, then it's another process. That's following Lord Chaitanya.
Can you say something about what you said that Ruchi comes in the Uttam?
Ruchi is the beginning stages of Uttam.
Can you say more? I don't fully understood that.
Ruchi means Ruchi. Ruchi, the symptom of Ruchi is na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kabitam ba. So if those are there, Ruchi is not really there. Some taste is there. If there's no Ruchi, you wouldn't be following the devotional process. Right? Materialists are doing because of Ruchi. But that's where it starts. But the Ruchi is not, the Uttam platform is not that developed. because you, the ruchi is you like the taste of chanting, or you're attached to it, rather than what's Krishna's liking in it. So that's why there's a difference between ruchi and ashakti, and then bhava. Bhava is madhyam bhutam.
It means one is an uttam platform.
Yeah, if one is on ruchi, just because he rolls on the ground doesn't mean he's on ruchi. Yeah, ruchi is there, but ruchi for what? Check at 12 at midnight and see who's in his room. Then you'll see what ruchi is there.
That's what you mentioned in the Nectar of Induction. What it says, what uttam. That's the meaning of uttam.
That's there. The best is that you're going for the top level. The higher the level, the better. It says if you can't get a Uttamadikari like that, then accept the Mahabhagavat. That's the instruction. So it's like you just start coming down and down and down and down.
Now I remember Prabhupada said insufficient guidance. He might not progress quickly due to insufficient guidance. This is Prabhupada's word.
Yes, that's there. That's there. Therefore, one looks for as high as one can get. But one has to accept something. Otherwise, if one dies without guru, then one has to come back again. You'll not go back to Godhead. Guaranteed. Unless one has accepted a guru, one will not go back to Godhead. That's guaranteed.
And what about one has, sometimes one comes to the devotional line because of a past life of devotional service. So in past life, he has accepted one guru. Yeah. He comes again in this life. He has to accept another or maybe the same. Or
yeah, yeah. It doesn't necessarily. The point is the process must go on. Mm-hmm. The process is there. Diksha is there. It means that you ate yesterday. Do you have to eat today?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's because the body is there. But if you're on the transcendental platform, eating is not necessary.
Not necessary.
Right? You're not eating because you need to maintain the body. You're eating because it's part of rasa. It's part of the pastime, accepting the Lord's prasad. But here, you have to. So you still have a conditioned nature. Therefore, the guru themselves will come, they'll arrange, but in any case, they're taken care of. Like that. So that's the whole thing. But these things are they're nice to discuss and think about because it gets the mind focused. But ultimately, one needs to come to the platform of pain.
Surrender.
Yeah. That's how one Sharanagati. That's the price. And for that price, then one can purchase pain.
The guru is not fully qualified, but can he advance?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. But that's why you have a whole society. Because then you take advantage of so many. You take care of the siksha of so many. Your guru only has certain realizations, but others have different realizations. You put that all together, it's a lot of realizations. So can you follow all that? No. So therefore, they have something more than what you have.
What about diksha? The guru is not fully qualified on
but
diksha.
But the diksha is the secondary thing. If you put, see, the kanista will put diksha first and siksha second. That's the problem. That's why the sahajiyas turn it around like that. Get bent out of shape because we don't have it, you know, they don't see our diksha finale. Because of that mentality. You keep coming back to this diksha. But what is it you're looking for in the diksha? It's the siksha. The diksha is not the main thing. It's the siksha in the diksha. But without the diksha, they're not going to get serious siksha. You don't give serious siksha to someone who's not has diksha. That's the rule.
But you say if you got diksha, then we are empowered.
You are empowered to, now you can learn. Just like you go out and touch a girl and you'll be put in jail. You marry that girl, you touch her all you like. You understand? So it's like that. You have diksha, then you're accepted. You don't have diksha, then it's limited.
That's the only point.
It's the essential point. But we can't make it cheap. See, foundation is up, not down. See, the problem is when you come to a conclusion, though it's the highest thing, then it's okay, and put that on the boundary. Now what about this technical detail, this T-lock and that little thing, and this guy wears this cloth, and that guy wears that cloth, and that guy wears it.
this high, but that guy over there wears it this high. And then the guy over there wears it this high. And then the one in there, he does folds in the front, but that one over there takes it and puts the folds on the side. That guy over there gets rid of the folds. And so then that is devotional service. That has nothing to do with it. So we take it, you know, they're this and they're that. It's so different. The principle is that you have the principle, it works. You know how to cook. You can cook anything. But if you know a recipe, which is all technical detail, you can cook that recipe. And then, the next preparation, you can't cook. So, the conclusion is the important thing. So when conclusion is there, don't relegate, oh, that's it. Okay, now, what about the... Because the details are for the intelligence and the mind, and that's tasty. Conclusion is outside of the conditioned nature, therefore it's not very attractive. That's why the mental speculators don't want conclusion. Conclusion is easy, but they don't want it because then all their enjoyment's over.
You like to speculate. Hmm? You take pleasure in speculation.
Yeah. Because it's something the mind, accept this, reject that, oh, that was a nice cloth, and this one this, and this one so austere, and this one that. And it's fun for the mind, accepting, rejecting, and all that. It's a taste. And the living entity has to have taste. There must be ruchi. The problem is what the ruchi is, because it's material that keeps us here. So therefore, sadhana bhakti and vaidhi sadhana, they purify us step by step of the material taste. Then we can actually taste the spiritual taste. Right? Just like you, let's say, like in you don't have so much here. In the West they have sometimes these contests for baking or cooking. Right? And all the ladies get together and cook something and then they bring it. Then they have a judge who will judge which is the best cake. So then they taste one cake. They have to rinse their mouth fully before they taste the next one. Otherwise they can't taste it. If you taste the next one, you'll get the taste of the first one. So until you've rinsed your mouth of this material taste, then you're not actually going to have spiritual taste. Therefore, na danam na janam na sundarim, that's the symptom of the beginning of ruchi, beginning. So then material is given up. But that's the beginning of the taste. The real taste then is still, we see that those gopis are there. They already, they didn't go to the rasa dance, so their taste wasn't enough.
When we are told that by experiencing a higher taste, then we can give up the lower taste. Now you are saying, first give up the lower taste, then you can experience a higher taste.
It goes on simultaneously. Because you're giving up so many tastes. You have unlimited tastes here. It's not just there's one taste and then you give it up. Oh, I'm attached to, you know, Cracker Jacks. So I give that up and then I become a pure devotee. That's one of unlimited millions and billions of attachments. So one is being given up by a higher taste, the next one in this, but you have to be practicing that. Otherwise, you may not. You read all the Radha Krishna pastimes and all this, and the next thing you're in bed with some girl. So where was the giving up of taste? And if you ask those Babaji's, and they'll say, well, Krishna, you know, it's only offenses to the Vaishnavas are sin. Anything else is not sin. They'll say that. You know, Prabhupada says it, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says it. It's understood that this is what's going on.
But in your example, you say he has to clean his mouth completely.
Is that if you want to take up really seriously spiritual taste, you have to give up material taste. Right? It's gross. That's gross. And the gross and subtle. There's beyond that. See, there's still material beyond that. You have the gross body, you have the subtle body, there's a third body. It's very generally only talked about in Vedanta Sutra. It's the causal body.
Casual body.
Causal. Means it causes.
Oh, the cause.
The karana surup. Right? That is the surup in which all there is desire to enjoy. No specific desire to enjoy. That's the subtle body. The mind wants to enjoy these certain things.
right? So then it'll group the senses around it and create a particular gross body. But what's caused the subtle body? It's the desire to enjoy. So it's polluted consciousness. That's the Vasudeva, right? The first thing is Mahatattva, that's Vasudeva, it's Brahman. The living entities are all liberated at that stage because they're not doing any activities. There's no karma. There's no karmic endeavor. There's no reaction. There's nothing. It's Brahman. But they want to enjoy. So therefore, then Sankarshan then creates ego and then it comes down. Right? Then the next stage. And then he's created ego. Then Prajumna creates the intelligence and the senses. And Aniruddha creates the mind. And then they enjoy. So then the subtle body is created by Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. But there's a body before that, Vasudeva. There's that body. So that you're still getting rid of from Ruchi up until Apandas. So when Apandas is attained, then that's gone. So there's still plenty of work to do. Still plenty of work to do.
Last thing about this, you were saying about jumping. You were jumping from here to certain gurus. There was recent controversy about falling in. So, everybody has to jump.
They don't have to jump. No one has to jump. No one has to jump. That's a excuse. In English, we call this. What do we call this? Where you justify something that you're doing? Rationalizing. This is rationalization. All the gurus are fallen. But we're not fallen. We're such wonderful. We're so special. We're so unique. No, you want guru, Krishna will give you. That's the thing. And even these gurus fell. People made advancement under their direction. They did advance. See, the point is because they fell didn't mean that they weren't good. It mean they stopped being good. Bharat Maharaj, he was an Uttamadhikari in the threshold of love of God. So threshold, that means the top ends of Baba. Right? He fell down. So does that mean he wasn't an Uttamadhikari? Why is this example in the Bhagavatam? So this Elda, they were never gurus. Some people say that, but that's not what Bhagavatam says. You can say, yes, they were not nitya siddhas. That you can say. But to say they were never gurus or never sincere, it's not a very generous position. The residents of the spiritual world don't say this. Generally, people here may say. But otherwise, why did they advance? How did they advance? They advanced. Because the process is there. You follow the process. Process works. Right? The monkey had disease. He couldn't eat. He desired to eat like anything. Couldn't eat. So then, one time, you know, he could eat a little bit, this, that. Then, one day, he couldn't eat at all. And for 1 month, he couldn't eat. And then, due to not eating, the weakness, he's jumping from branch to branch, he falls into this pond that's there underneath where all the monkeys are living. And then, you know, crawls out of the pond and, you know, is in bad shape. And 5 days later, dies and goes back to Godhead. And why? Because it was Purushottam Mas. He fasted and took bath on the month of Purushottam. So he did devotional service, even though it was unknowing, wasn't very advanced. Right? Okay? So the point is the process works. Just like you want to get from here to Delhi. Easiest, you know, is walk out this door and right here there's a car and it drives you straight into Delhi. That's one way. Another way is walk out here, not walk from here to there, walk to the front gate, catch a rickshaw, go down to the bus stand, get a bus, you know, or get a temple. That will drop you off at this Chappikar. here. From there, then you catch another bus, maybe it takes you to Faridabad, or you catch a lorry and it gets you to Faridabad, then they drop you off, and then you catch something else, and then finally you get there. But you got there. So the point is, do you want to get there, or do you want to sit around, you know, just going, oh, this one, this, that one, that, and so many other. That's the point. Someone's been through three gurus, so what? They still advanced. And if they follow the process, they'll continue to advance. If they stop following the process, then they won't advance.
Then why Nectar Prabhupada said we should accept Uttam? The best food, accept Uttam.
He says accept Uttam, but he says if it's not available, you accept the Madhyam, and if that's not available, you'll accept the Kanishka. Take that point from Prabhupada also. Don't just take what you like. And besides that, you missed the point of the founder Acharya. Prabhupada is just another guru. Just a guru in the line. Nothing special about him. Why do we use the term founder? Because then, the founder, his instructions, you have Uttamadhikari instructions here. That's what you want. Now, if you can't get an Uttamadhi someone to give you, you accept Diksha from a Madhyama or Kanista. But here's the Uttamadhikari instructions that you're looking for. Diksha is not the thing. It's the Siksha. So because if they're Uttam, then they can also see that you are following this to the Uttam level. If not, they can see that you're following to the Kanista Madhyam. But it's open to you. And if you're sincere, someone else will come along. Maybe your guru won't tell you. Someone else will come along, give a class. Something will happen. And you'll advance. You want to advance, Krishna will arrange it. But if you get stuck on this thing like that, you'll be going to be stuck for a long time. Because you will not be able to see what is in the Uttam. That's the point. How will the Kanista recognize the Uttam? How will he recognize? He can't. It's impossible. Therefore, Prabhupada gives these very simple definitions how a Kanista can recognize what an Uttam is. Is he always engaged in Krishna's service? Is he speak according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra? Very simple things. And if that's there, then we accept. And then we get as far as we can. If they take us the whole life, great. If they don't, then we continue on. That's why we have a society. There's plenty of people. And if you were, you know, if you were so wonderful, you would have either already gone back to Godhead with, you know, some of the lords of the eternal associates, or you would have come in the future when, you know, the future generations are all highly advanced. But we happen now because we're not so qualified. We have to remember our qualification also. Means if we really want to find someone more qualified, we have to be able to see our own faults. If we can see our faults, right, then we're able to actually see good in others. But if we only see faults in others, then we'll only see good in ourselves. That's the process. Therefore, humility is the first principle of knowledge in Gita. The first verse, knowledge is the first thing is humility. Without that, the rest of it doesn't work. It doesn't function. Okay, I think we should end here, otherwise it's getting late. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.